The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show is brought to you by Absa Commercial Property Finance. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. Good evening and welcome to The Money Show. So the SAA business rescue process has been brought to a conclusion. They've handed SAA back to the board and the remains of its management. We don't really know too much about what is going on within the thinking and the strategy of SAA, what it's going to look like into the future. We have no clue. We don't know. So I would like some sort of insight if I could get it from SAA, but they're not talking. Perhaps they're trying to figure out what to do. I have no idea. But yeah, watching the space very, very closely indeed, because of course SAA is a massive liability, not quite on an ESCOM scale, but it is a problem in many, many cases. And so we'll talk to ASATA this evening, the Association of South African Travel Agents. They're going to have a thing or two to say about SAA and its miraculous restoration. I suppose that's the most polite way of putting it. And just when does it get airborne ever again? I also see IATA, the International Air Transport Association, is talking all about getting the travel passports done as well, which is not a moment too soon either. There's a lot to come on tonight's Money Show, including how not to overpay for a bottle of wine. That's in our best bits with Michael Fridgen, a chat we had earlier this week. Michael, of course, is one of South Africa's leading wine experts, and he knows how to get a deal when it comes to a bottle of wine. He'll explain how in the best bits coming up later.
702.
Bruce is on The Money Show.
So SAA going back to the board and its executives, they've filed what's called a notice of substantial implementation. Means like, yeah, we think we're finished. To the company's Intellectual Property Commission, that is a piece of good news there. Now, here's the problem with SAA. It's going to have a long line of people still waiting for money. One of those people still waiting for money is Otto de Vries, the chief executive at the Association of Southern Africa Travel Agents. R3 billion is still outstanding to passengers and to travel agents, Otto.
Hi, Bruce. Yeah, indeed, and it's an interesting number that remains outstanding. If we look at the allocated unflown ticket liability, it's mysteriously close to the amount that's outstanding, which is disturbing and worrying for us, and certainly one of the areas that we're putting a lot of our effort and attention onto, because
why? I wonder. Sorry, Otto, are you still with us? Earth to Otto. No, Otto's wings are clipped.
Don't resolve.
Oh, no, there we are. Sorry, Otto. Otto, we lost all the good bits you were saying there because your wings got clipped. Let's try again. That 3 billion rand, you say, is an interesting number because it correlates with a number that is in the documentation. Revisit that point if you would.
Yes, sure, absolutely. So if you've got me now, I think ultimately the concern for us is that it's interestingly close to the amount that's been allocated specifically to unflown ticket liability. And for us, the real concern is that if we're going to want to build any trust and confidence in the consumer to book SAA going forward, if we don't address and deal with the outstanding ticket liability, I think it's going to be incredibly difficult to retain or rebuild that confidence and trust, not only with the consumer, but also at the end of the day with the travel agents, who ultimately have delivered up until the business rescue stepped in at least 80% of SAA sales.
And here's the issue. I mean, if they don't have the confidence of the travel agents will push customers elsewhere, saying, "I'm terribly sorry, but we can't trust the airline." Are you getting any indication whatsoever as to what you might expect from SAA?
Well, look, I think it's early days. They have certainly reached out and they have had conversations with us. They recognize the value and the importance of the travel agent community in terms of delivering the future sales that they're going to need in order to secure some sort of viability and sustainability for the carrier. So from that perspective, we are feeling, if you will, slightly optimistic in the management team. But at the end of the day, the proof is in the pudding, isn't it? And for them, the real challenge is that if the funds aren't there to deliver on those unflown ticket liabilities, it makes it very difficult for them to execute it going forward.
I got an email from them the other day telling them that both my air miles are still mine because I don't have very many. But there is the intention there. Do you get any sort of indication from them as to when we could see the first SAA flight? Is there any sort of behind-the-scenes planning going on?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously that is work in progress. We haven't been given any clear timelines. But I think what's important for me is that when they think about route development, they need to think not only about where consumer demand is, but where they're also going to get the right support. In the absence of SAA over the past year and a bit, it's very evident that a number of carriers, despite the COVID crisis, have very effectively stepped into those gaps. And for me, I think what is more interesting is to understand exactly where SAA believes they're going to drive value and where they can believe that they can fit into a role and have a gap which is going to drive value and opportunity.
Do you see space for them in the market? You know, one gets a sense that we're not seeing massive load factors. I'm sure they're picking up at the moment, but the airlines are having to juggle their schedules quite aggressively in order to sort of get the best load factors they can, the ones that are operating at the moment.
Yeah, sure. And I think that's part of the challenge, and I'm very sympathetic to that. But, you know, I remain incredibly concerned around the way that airlines operate, and specifically it is their business model. This idea that you can collect monies from passengers through travel agents months in advance and to use that to effectively pay for your operational costs today, in my mind, post-COVID, is no longer acceptable or sustainable. So it'll be very interesting to see how airlines are going to rethink their business model, because I don't believe that customers are going to feel very comfortable about handing over money to an airline months in advance when they don't have confidence whether those flights are even going to operate.
Correct, absolutely. And certainly you don't want to have to be paying massive insurances to cover yourself either. Otto de Vries, thank you. Chief Executive at ASATA, the Association of Southern African Travel Agents. It's a big one. SAA has been handed back to management. I'd like to see a plan, please, SAA, if that's not too much bother, to see when you're going to be back in the skies and how you're going to do it and what sort of guarantees you're going to offer the traveling public, if you can.
You're with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
So we heard from ASATA, now from IATA. This is the International Air Transport Association. I see IATA has partnered with a local pathology group to provide those so-called COVID passports for a time when we can start flying once again. I know we're doing flying domestically, but we talk about global travel once again. It's a positive signal that we're beginning to move in this direction. Mike Atta is the co-founder at Atta Pathology Services. What's the tie-up, Mike?
Good evening, Bruce. Thank you for having me on the show. So we are the first South African and African partner with IATA on the travel pass. So delighted to mention that this evening.
Okay, but the travel pass, the COVID passport, call it what you like. How's it going to work? What are you going to be doing in order to make this travel pass happen?
Absolutely. So in the future, passengers will have to upload their passport, upload their COVID tests and upload their vaccinations, perhaps, in order to travel. So if you take Mr. B. Whitfield, for example, going to Davos next February time, I'm sure he'll be flying with a airline that's, for example, take Lufthansa. Lufthansa might say, right, we partner with IATA. It's one of the digital wallets. IBM have got one and others. But how it would work is that you would get an invitation to download the app in the secure environment on your phone. You put your passport details into the phone, photos, etc. Goes on to there, and then the requirements of where you're going to travel will be automatically uploaded to your phone. These things move every day, Bruce, and that's the beauty of working with IATA. It's all integrated there. It will tell you if you need a COVID test or whatever kind of test, and then it will direct you to their official labs around the world where you are. We're in Cape Town and Johannesburg. We would then do the test with you and send those results directly to the platform. And then when you go to the airport, you literally just show your smartphone, you scan in, you get a big tick, and you're on the plane. And the same at the other end.
There is some uncertainty around the world globally about acceptance, and a lot of people are averse to this idea of COVID passports, but I can't see it working any other way. How secure is it going to be? Who is making the rules? Who is going to ensure that the data is protected? Who's going to ensure that there isn't massive fraud?
Yeah, I mean, the security is of the utmost. I mean, at the moment, we're traveling with bits of paper. Aren't we? But since February, our group have been installing these QR codes that are encrypted and secure onto the bits of paper. I don't know if you've been to one of our Dis-Chem sites, but you get those there. And from there, you can scan that anywhere from any QR code around the world to show that. But security is at the utmost on these things. Certain ones of these passports are using technology that doesn't even exist in Africa and in South Africa. But the IATA has the world's best technology and our lab information system as well. It's all POPI GDPR compliant.
Let's say I've got to be in London, I'm dreaming, for a meeting on, I don't know, Wednesday. I'm still dreaming. I've got a ticket, but now I need to get my travel pass. What hoops do I need to jump through before I arrive at the airport on Tuesday evening?
Absolutely. So the airline are going to tell you how they want you to work with this. So at the moment, these travel and health passports are being trialed. The first one was, from the IATA perspective, the first one was 15th of March out of Singapore. The first African one was this past Sunday, Ethiopian, ran two flights out and two flights in. We're still looking for the first partner who wants to work with us in South Africa. Maybe it's SAA, maybe it's others. But they would come to you and say, okay, you're on the plane next Wednesday. Okay, we are official. We want you to run on the IBM platform or in this case, the IATA. Here's the invitation, download the app. And then you work backwards from there. It will guide you as to when and where you need to do testing, if that's indeed the case.
An additional cost, of course, to the already high and often prohibitive cost of international travel. What is this process of sort of getting COVID compliant going to cost?
Yeah, I mean, it's no cost to the passenger and it's no cost to, I mean, they are, they're charging the airlines a little bit. I mean, this is to get away with quarantine. You don't want to be stuck for 10 days at a Heathrow hotel room. and that's the global movement. We've got to move away from quarantines, get people moving again. I mean, in South Africa, I saw the Stats SA tourism report on Tuesday. We have 71% foreign arrival drop last year. 5 million people instead of 15 million people. We need people to come back. And, you know, Africa, South Africa, there's talk of fraudulent certificates. And there was something the other day on Dame Maverick at the park and the bus station. Well, this is absolutely not the case. You know, it's encrypted, it's secure, it's paperless, and it's outlined with some of the top technology in the world.
Mike, thank you very much indeed. Mike Atter, the co-founder at Atter Pathology Services. They've been asked by IATA to run the COVID passports for South Africa. See, if you're missing flying, by the way, and if you've got that hankering after airline food, not that I can imagine, unless you fly in the pointy bit at the front, that there is anything that you would be missing about airline food. But South Korea's Jeju Air has opened a brand new restaurant. The restaurant serves in-flight meals. So if you're missing flight, if you're missing travel, you can go to the Jeju restaurant and you can, and it's on one of those like conveyor belts that you see in some sushi places. And you can go and you can select your airline meal, and it comes in a little tray with little foil bits and everything. It's just like being on the airline. It's, yeah, okay. Not everything about air travel is glamorous and sexy, and, you know, if you like the food, good on you. Gary McNamara standing by from Sundown Private Wealth. We'll talk to him in just a moment.
Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
Horrible day on the markets. We'll get there in a moment. But does anyone know if the Direct Marketing Association opt-out still works? Because I put my name on their database years and years ago. I haven't checked. My own fault. But I put my name there years ago as a means to get fewer cold calls from call centers. And over the years, I've received fewer calls from call centers, which is a positive thing. Occasionally, though, one does get through. And I got one today from a company that is not my cell phone service provider, and it's certainly not a cell phone service provider I would ever use because I couldn't hear the person who was calling me. If you run a call center and you're going to ask somebody to phone anyone, phone me, and speed read a script about something I don't want, please could you just ensure the environment from which you operate allows firstly the agent to hear clearly. So when I say, no, thank you, I'm not interested, they don't take that as a, oh, you want to hear my speed reading skills, let me read to you really fast. So they can't hear what I'm saying. I can't hear what they're saying. The rattle and the clatter in the background of, you know, 1, 2, 10, or 1,000 people, whatever it is in the background, doing exactly the same as the poor individual phoning me. If you just got the environment right so that you could, you know, people could communicate clearly, it would raise your likelihood of success. Make it easier for your agent to be told in my best calm voice that I'm not interested. But when they can't hear me and assume that I've said, boy, I am so interested, please speed read to me at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. It's the one thing that I haven't yet had this week. And it really helps nobody, not you. And it really doesn't help me. And it doesn't help anybody who's your customer. Here endeth the lesson on how to fix your call center by Bruce.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Gary McNamara is with Sanlam Private Wealth. He's on the line to us from Joburg this evening. And after quite a nice week, it turned into a bleak and nasty Friday. Maybe anticipating sell in May and go away. Do we dare predict that, Gary McNamara?
Yeah, Bruce, we actually saw the farms of it from the east early this morning. They were a little bit weaker at our open. And I think there were a couple of areas where you can tell we've had a really good run-up. The corporate earnings in America this week have been fantastic, particularly in the IT space. So we've had a reasonably strong week, and I hate to use that word, but I think there was an element of profit-taking or taking a little bit off the table. But we also had a couple of our own issues in terms of the weakness, particularly in the financial sector. Bruce, we had the private sector credit, which is an indication of consumer demand in South Africa, how much credit is being absorbed by the consumer base, and that was down 1.52% versus now, consensus of being positive.
Is that now, because the loans by banks fell the first time, I think, since about a decade ago that the loans fell. Is it because the banks didn't want to lend or because we didn't want to borrow from the banks? It's probably a little bit of both.
I'm going to be cynical. I think the banks are very cautious at the moment. I think their credit policy and their risks are very conservative. And I think in this environment, as you've seen from governments, you've almost got to take an element of risk to stimulate the economy. And I would put a little bit of pressure on the banks. I think there is an element of conservatism in their credit lending. But I guess also with people losing jobs, a weak economy, it's difficult. But I would certainly put the blame at some of the credit lending and banking sector.
One of the people I enjoy following on Twitter, one of the many people I enjoy following on Twitter, is a technical analyst by the name of Karen Richards. And she tweeted today, and I'm curious about your thoughts on what she is saying. She's saying, a year ago, you could throw a banana at the JSE and hit a winner. But one has to accept that those days are over. Many stocks have doubled in price. The valuation gaps have shrunk significantly. There are still opportunities, but focus must be on risk and downside protection. That sounds ominous.
Yeah, Bruce, it's a difficult one because, you know, the JSE is driven by various factors. We've got the commodities that are still continuing to do very well. The underlying commodity prices, the Anglos, the Billitons, the iron ore, is very strong. And I think there's an element of
view that there's going to be an inflation coming through. Then you've got the mass passes on that are getting affected by more factors in China and government regulation. And then you'd really talk to the South African ink sector. And there, I think it's been a little bit stodgy. We've had quite a nice recovery from an emerging market view where there's been a little bit of what we call risk on, where people have wanted to take some of that on board. But I don't think it's a dripping roast at the moment, but I do think that commodities are going to continue to perform quite well. And I think you've got to be selective at what you are looking at on the JSE. So, you know, talking to my book, I think it's a case for active portfolio management rather than just a tracker, because I think there's going to be sectors that do better and sectors that are going to do worse.
Well, the commodity prices, I mean, we talk about these guys all the time, underpinning very, very strong performances by gold mining companies, by the platinum producers on the JSE doing spectacularly. I was really interested to see Rhodes Food Group's performance here. I mean, huge boon for Rhodes Food Group, and these sorts of profits that they are going to be reporting aren't going to be well received by the broad South African public based on the fact that we are seeing food price inflation coming through. And I think a lot of people are getting quite apprehensive of a winter of food price hikes.
Absolutely, Bruce. And in that soft commodity space, you know, the foods in particular are coming through quite strongly. We've actually got a bumper crop in South Africa, which is moderating, and the stronger rand. So we're not feeling the full effects of it. But that food basket is going up, unfortunately, and the poorest of the poor gets affected. I think Rhodes Foods is a great business. You know, it's coming off a little bit of a lowish base, but I think it's one of those companies from a JSE point of view that you want to be looking at. I think food is a theme. I think with the amount of money that's splashing around globally, you're looking for places where you can buy assets that have got real business growth to it. And I think that trading update or the results are coming through, indications from Rhodes Foods, is certainly an area where you want to play the JSE from that side, yeah.
Gary McNamara, thank you, Senior Portfolio Manager from Sanlam Private Wealth.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Commercial Property Finance, committed to delivering innovative solutions for groundbreaking developments. That's African Nacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
You know what else is happening this weekend? And that is, it's Woodstock. Woodstock for capitalists, the real one, the one that matters. 90-year-old Warren Buffett, his deputy, 97-year-old Charlie Munger, doing their second virtual annual shareholder meeting. A lot happier, I think, than this time last year. Berkshire Hathaway at record highs. There's a huge sense of optimism in the United States about the recovery, the economic recovery, and share prices are going absolutely mad. I wonder how Warren and Charlie are going to be managing expectations into the future. And so we'll reflect on it on Monday once the dust has settled and once we've had time to read the letters and the get a sense of what was said. But certainly American technology shares have had a really, really good week, and 2020 was the catalyst for them really to fly. And so you will have tens of thousands of Berkshire Hathaway shareholders, the fans who usually would go to Omaha in Nebraska, where I was lucky enough to go four, five years ago, and go and spend the weekend. Went to Omaha for a weekend. What a long way to go for a weekend. Cramped. But that's all of that. I mean, we've got this double dip recession in Europe. COVID is running rampant in lots of places, particularly in India. 100 million Americans by the end of today would have been vaccinated. So America's fine. But America's part of the rest of the world, of course. And so it's going to be interesting to see the views being taken by Warren Buffett and by Charlie Munger. The number of people, by the way, who were planning to work beyond the age of 67 fell to a record low of 33% last month. So lots of people have been anticipating that they're going to have to work harder for longer, and there's going to be this no retirement, of course, and that's going to be a real, real problem. Well, the number of people in America expecting to work beyond the age of 67 falling to a record low. 33% last month. And that's what happens when stock markets run and house prices rocket. I wonder what happens to that number, though, when and if, and we don't know this for an absolute fact yet, but when and if inflation starts to rear its ugly, golemish head in the United States, whether or not that's going to have a different outlook effect on on investors in the United States. On the next Money Show, we're focusing on the massive fortunes amassed by a small group of Afrikaners, largely centered on Stellenbosch. Ebi Domisa has written a brand new book called Fortunes, The Rise and Rise of Afrikaner Tycoons. And we talk about Michiel de Roux and Yannick Mouton and so many others, people who have made absolute fortunes since the dawn of democracy. Ralf Matecha, who's a political analyst, he knows how to read the winds of change better than most. He joins us for Other People's Money, telling us about his first jobs and his money mistakes. We love money mistakes. It makes us feel better about our own. That's coming up next time on The Money Show. Also this evening, in addition to speaking to tonight's guest on our Friday file, her name is Roslyn Bechet. She's the founder of a wonderful business called Blankets for Africa. I recommend you go onto her website. If you just want to feel warm, just go look at the images on the website. You will feel warmer immediately. And when we tell you the story, not only will your body feel warm, but your heart will feel warmer too as well. A wonderful story of a South African startup looking to assist people who needed the help at the time, while at the same time also finding a way to make a profit as a result of running a sustainable business. And we'll play the Brutal Biz Quiz. Got fabulous questions for you this evening on the Biz Quiz. You need your wits about you. We need you to focus, and we need you to play. That's coming up in about 6 or 7 minutes' time.
702.
Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
Roslyn Bechet's got a bit of a telephone line problem this evening, we are told, so we're trying to get her on an acceptable phone line, because I'd hate to her to try to tell her story over a crackly telephone line, and it does seem as if we are struggling. Did I hear earlier that there is a bus strike on Monday? Also, which bus company is it? I don't know. If anybody can tell me about the bus strike, is there a bus strike looming? I didn't hear it on Eyewitness News. I apologize. I am not aware of a bus strike. Hunger in South Africa, says somebody on the SMS line this evening, is going to get worse. It's going to be a cold winter. We've seen frost in Gauteng. Retailers and manufacturers must put down prices. Soup kitchens and food parcels are not going to cut it. What about those holding on by their fingernails? 50 rand for 2 litres of oil. I mean, food inflation is a real worry. It's a real worry. Bumper crops and all that sort of stuff. I wish I could get to the bottom of food price inflation. I really do. You go to the farmers and you say, farmers, why are food prices so high? They say, no, it's not us. We're the price takers. You go to the manufacturers and say, well, it's input costs. And you go to the retailers and they say, well, you know what? We've got to make a margin on what the manufacturers give us to sell. And ultimately, you and I just end up paying a lot more to feed our families. And it's very, very disconcerting. Roslyn Bechet is the founder of Blankets from Africa. I need the backstory, Roslyn, of you on a Karoo trip, seeing a need and finding and seeing an opportunity at the same time.
Hello, Bruce. Thank you for inviting me. It started a few years ago. I took a road trip, a nostalgic trip back to the Karoo with my sister back. And all the way, stopping at the little towns, we noticed incremental little changes. And by the time we got to Haarfenet, it became evident that poverty had really crept in badly. And during the trip, I went in search of an elephant foot Siam tree, which led me to a lawyer who said, go to New Bethesda, visit a kitchen run by a woman called Auntie Evelyn. She takes in abandoned children. And I questioned him and said, why and how and what? And it came out that women there were so desperate because the unemployment rate was 96%. And they were having babies and abandoning them for the government grant. And I went, and I remember being greeted by all these happy little children. And each and every one was abandoned. And that's when I decided that there was something I could do. I can knit very well. And the whole country in that part of the world is surrounded by sheep, and it just seemed so natural to follow that. So after a search of high-quality export yarn and developing this simple pattern, I started Blankets from Africa. My sister's been with me all the way through, and she's helped me develop pods, train, upskill, and now we have probably around 40 knitters, skilled to unskilled, and it takes time to upskill, but our patterns accommodate everyone. And we've developed a beautiful luxury brand, and just recently we have been approached to take it a step further and just refine it and get it to a global quality, which has been amazing.
I mean, it's a fabulous story, Roz. It really is. I mean, you said you were going back on a nostalgic trip. So I take it you were born somewhere around Graaf Reinet.
Well, actually not. I was born in Port Elizabeth, but my father used to take us. Yes, exactly. We're on the periphery. But my father used to take us hunting, and he had family who had a farm there. But we spent so much time in that part of the world. And I mean, it was beautiful. Just tracts of land. And I remember a river and collecting fossils. And it was just beautiful. Mm. And the BKB was like the heart of the town, which is now being replaced by the bottle store. You know, and all these little indications of extreme poverty.
Absolutely.
And it just felt like the right time to get in and do something. And this is where we came up with giving hope one stitch at a time. It really, it helps.
How do you source? You said you source export quality yarn. So, I mean, the sheep are in the Karoo. The sheep are shorn in the Karoo. I take it that the wool is spun locally. How do you source your product, your raw material?
Well, most of our wool is exported. We keep very little here because we had so little industry. Mm. And that, too, was another factor in bringing in something that was artisanal, something totally authentic. And I remember my first, it's one thing to have an idea, but another thing to take it to market.
Sure.
And my first call was to Karma's Markers. I met with Vonda du Toit, without hesitation, took it on. She was absolutely fantastic, and that was our platform to actually getting our product out there and to build on the name Blankets from Africa. And now we're at the Oranjezo Farmers Market, run by the amazing Cheryl and Kaz. It is just incredible. Obviously, there, being at the waterfront in Cape Town, there's more exposure to foreign tourists, and who knows where it will take us. Fantastic.
I wish you luck with it. I mean, how many women have you got who are now knitting and who are now in full swing of production?
Currently, we have around 40. They come and go. We've had a few that have died. We've had a few that have had to give up for whatever reasons. But we've also moved in another direction where we're forming partnerships with people from far and wide. We have such an outreach now, and there's so much poverty in our country. So recently we did a collaboration with someone in Ponderland who has a beautiful 4 hectares of land that she bought. It was all fallow land, and she's turned it into perma farming, and on it she has a Montessori school. So we choose our partnerships carefully, because right now with COVID we can't go there, we can't upskill, and we give them tasks that would be appropriate without us going in and training. And it's worked very well. So that is the sort of thing we're looking at now, is maybe forming partnerships and using the big platform we have to showcase what these fabulous women can do.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, none of this happens without an extraordinary amount of hard work, and it doesn't happen without a catalyst and somebody with an idea, and then somebody who's prepared to take that idea and run with it and then realize what they've got themselves into.
It is.
Suddenly,
it takes work and a lot of dedication.
But it takes on a life of its own, and I think there's a huge amount of goodwill, and I think there are a lot of people who don't come up with the ideas or who can't have the level of commitment that you do, who do want to help. And so you get the sort of almost virtuous, quite big circle developing where good things come from fine effort. The international partnership is something I'm looking forward to finding out about, Rosalind. I really am, because I'm thinking, globally, there's a wonderful marketing opportunity for not only the story, but the products. The products are beautiful, and if they are neatened up and sort of professionalized a bit more, you could be in global boutiques.
Exactly. Our products are luxurious. I didn't want something that was a thrift shop type bag, something that was, handmade, artisanal. Now needs to be artisanal, but it shouldn't look artisanal. It's got to be beautifully finished with the finest quality yarns, but hand-knitted and exquisitely knitted. And globally, we've already sent our first orders overseas, very small, but nevertheless, it's our first exposure. And we're really hoping to build on that, because the more we sell, the more we employ. And it's, this stage, that's what we hope to do, is to go far and wide and take it beyond the Peru, but keep it very authentic.
Rosalind Bechet, thank you so much. Founder of Blankets from Africa. What a lovely story. Just have a look at the website. And if you don't feel warm and fuzzy on the outside, if you're feeling a bit cold and a bit chilly on this autumn evening, and it feels like winter, but it's autumn, on this autumn evening, just have a look at the Blankets from Africa website. Have a look at what they're doing. And you might feel cold on the outside, but I guarantee you, once you've had a good look, you'll feel all warm and fuzzy on the inside. Coming up in a moment, the Brutal Biz Quiz. Let's play that this evening, because I think we need a little bit of lifting tonight. I would like you to play. I would like you to give me a call on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Let's play the Brutal Biz Quiz. I would like to know which state-owned company grounded Mango this week. One state-owned company grounded another. Which one grounded Mango? Like to know the name of that state-owned enterprise, please, on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Commercial Property Finance, committed to delivering innovative solutions for groundbreaking developments. That's African Nacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Brutal Biz Quiz time on a Friday night. Let's get a whiz of the Biz Quiz, shall we? Which state-owned enterprise briefly grounded Mango this week in Nkululeko and North Riding first?
Hi, how are you, Bruce?
I just need an answer. And if you're right, I'll feel fine. If not, you've ruined my weekend. It's all on your shoulders in Nkululeko.
All right, I hope I'm right. But it's a public enterprises department. And the airport company, AXA, sorry.
Okay, so which one are you going? Because Public Enterprises Department is not a public enterprise. It is the Department of Public Enterprises. So which one of those grounded Mango?
Airports Company South Africa.
I was headed for a terrible weekend, but you've improved the outlook. Thank you. Airports Company South Africa, they did pull the plug briefly, but then somehow they managed to do a deal and Mango flies again. Who gave Malusi Gigaba's firstborn son a gold necklace?
The Guptas?
Which one?
The Guptas. The Guptas.
Which Gupta?
Atul. I'll take a guess then. Atul Gupta.
I'll accept Guptas. AJ Gupta. It was real on Monday. Norman Ngoma, the estranged wife of Malusi Gigaba, testified at the Zondo Commission about her family's relationship with the Gupta family. AJ Gupta gave Gigaba also a white 3 Series BMW. Oh, that's nice. And a gold chain. That's very nice. Now, which car company has sold 10% of its Bitcoin holdings?
I'll just have to guess. Daimler Chrysler.
Uncle Loco, got you eventually. Thank you for playing. Shael in Edenvale, there's a car company. It's invested heavily in Bitcoin. Bitcoin actually made most of its profit. Its car making didn't. What is the name of the company that is selling its Bitcoin holdings after lots of hype when it bought in?
Hello, Bruce. Actually, you know what? I actually was calling to answer the AXA question. So I'm going to hazard a guess.
Yes.
Ford.
Ford? No, I'm afraid not. No, it's not. I do like, I mean, unfortunately, what happens with the biz quiz is it moves along. We can't just, which question would you like to answer? The one you know? Excellent. No, Shail, we can't do that, I'm afraid. Maurice in Newlands in Cape Town, who's been selling Bitcoin?
Tesla.
Absolutely right. Tesla has been talking up Bitcoin hugely and this week decided it was time to sell. I'd like to know from you, Maurice, this evening, which American tech giant revealed this week that it had saved over $1 billion by working from home? No, it's not that one, Maurice. It's not that one. No, I'm afraid not, Maurice. Charles in Cape Town, American tech giant. It saved $1 billion working from home. Which one was it?
I couldn't hear.
An American tech giant saved $1 billion working from home. Which one was it?
Amazon.
No, it's not Amazon, I'm afraid. Running out of tech giants, there are lots of them, Jeff in Weinberg, and we haven't got all night. I hope you've got an answer for me.
It's Google.
It is Google. It's so Google. An annualized $1 billion, they're anticipating they will save it. The Google parent Alphabet saying that, yeah, promotions, travel, entertainment, all of that stuff died, and so therefore it saved money. Where does Fundi Chazibana work? She's the only woman in the senior
level. She's the Deputy Governor of the Reserve Bank.
It's very rude to interrupt, Jeff, but I'm going to make you the wizard of this quiz. Well done. Jeff and Weinberg in Cape Town. We must leave it there for the biz quiz this evening because we need to get to the best bits as well. That comes up immediately after Eyewitness News. In the meantime, though, Jeff is doing loop-de-loop around his lounge. Well done, Jeff. Tonight's wizard of the biz quiz.